My name is Brittany, and I'm an anorexic, bulimic, compulsive overeater, and really, really grateful to be here with you and to be abstinent today. Oh, thank you, God. So I'm just going to take a deep breath and make sure that I'm grounded. And I was reminded before this meeting that if God is speaking through me, then I have nothing to worry about, which is really comforting because I'm never alone today. And this isn't about me. This is about hopefully carrying the message to even just one person, just even one person. With that said, I'll share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And it's hard to do in 20 minutes. So I don't know if anyone's timing me, but if someone could just give me like a 5 minutes, that'd be wonderful. Okay. So I'm an anorexic, bulimic, compulsive overeater. And I don't want to be like, I'm a hardcore bulimic. It was the bulimia for me that took me down. But you know, what it was like is I was thinking earlier, and I think because this has come up recently, is my core belief that I think I've always had from a very, very young age was I'm fat and ugly. Like that was what I believed since I was a little girl. And I remember like little, very, very young. And I don't know where it came from because I swear I don't remember anyone saying to me, you're fat and ugly, but that's what I believed. And recently it came up and it's been coming up and I'm not quite sure why. And it's icky. It's an icky feeling. And today, thank God I can go to God about it. I have tools. I have people to talk to. I can know that it's my belief system and maybe something else is going on. And that's not the problem, you know, that was just my go-to because I was very uncomfortable in my own skin. I always was growing up. I did came from an island, called Bermuda, very small town, you know, 21 miles long. Everyone knows everyone and very small minded, culture. And I don't remember I don't remember food being like an issue at a very young age, but I know that my body was an issue. And I always felt like the ugly duckling in my family. Again, I'm not really quite sure why, but I looked very different from my mom and my sister. And I just always wanted to look like them. And I just remember just it not being fair that I didn't look like them. And I looked like my dad. And I always got told, you know, oh, you look like your dad. You look like your dad. And I hated that. You know, to this day, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate my Italian roots, but I didn't want to look like him. And I thought, oh, then I must look like a boy. You know, for some reason that was deeply ingrained in me. I always remember, and I very at a very young age, I learned how to lie. So I remember people like, oh, let's see like photos of you as a baby. And I would show them photos of my sister. I mean, I just at a very young age would lie about little things like that. and I would destroy photos of me. Anytime there was a photo taken of me, I didn't want to look at it. I'm not sure where this core belief came from, as I said, but it was always there. And then later on, I had wonderful parents growing up. I was privileged. I'm really grateful for, you know, for the love that I got as a child. And yet it was like never enough. I don't know where that came from either. But I always wanted more attention, more whatever. I do have a history like of, sexual abuse and, for a really long time, I believe that's why I had an eating disorder because my body was the problem. And I also know that that's part of my story of having that belief that like, well, if I just didn't look like a woman and if I just like was really, really skinny, then I couldn't get hurt and that I'd be safe. And I mean, that's just my truth. So I've always wanted to have the body of a child. I always did. And that went on for a long time. I don't always talk about it, but it's, I know it's a huge part of why I've had a lot of issues around my body to this day, you know, and I'm becoming a lot more comfortable, thank God, because of this program. So, you know, that's part of my story. But as I said, like at some point, and I think I was maybe 12, 13 years old, it was like the lie that my head told me was I am fat and I need to lose weight. And so as a result, that was the belief that I clung to the most, and I went to any lengths to be thin. And really, I mean, I would go to any lengths to be thin. And it started with diet pills. I remember trying all the diet pills that there were at the time. Then I started exercise. I would try to restrict. And so it was always about trying to control my body and the food. And this went on for all my teenage years. It wasn't until I left Bermuda, I left this whole little island and went to the real world, came to the United States, that I kind of discovered some other methods, you know. And it wasn't until I was maybe 16, 17 that I discovered bulimia. And for me, it was like, oh my God, this is the best secret in the world. Like, no one else knows about this. I can eat anything and just get rid of it and be skinny. And ever since the first time that I threw up, it was like, that was like my love affair with bulimia. It was a love and hate relationship. But it became far more than just a means of controlling my weight, you know, which we all know about. It became a way of controlling my emotions. And it also became a self-inflicted punishment. You know, I was mad at something, I stuffed it down with food, and then I threw up. And years later, I remember therapists, you know, saying, you're really angry. Like, let's talk about your anger. And I was like, I'm not angry at all. And she's like, you violently stuff yourself with food until you can't breathe, and then you purge it out. you're angry. I couldn't really get in touch with my emotions either until I came into this program, because growing up, I always had a smile on my face. It was always, I was like this happy kid, but I always was so insecure, like so insecure. And again, the outside was the problem. Today, I know that that wasn't really the problem. It's kind of what's going on in here. And this journey for me has been about like facing the truth about myself and facing the self-hatred that I've always had and coming to like myself. I can't say I love myself, but I like myself today. I can look myself in the mirror. This program has given me that gift. So I don't think I said this, but June 14th, last month, I got 3 years of abstinence, which free from binging, purging, restricting, laxatives, overexercising, just all of it. And that is a miracle to me, because I came into the rooms of the first time in 2014 and it's 2023. So it's been a process. And really, like, what I want to share more than anything is that my process of step one has been just that. Like, I cannot control my step one, what it takes for me to go from my head to my heart with accepting powerlessness over this disease. It's, you know, and I say to my sponsees, and it's like, I don't know when that last binge is going to be, or that last purge or whatever. I didn't know the amount of times that I thought this is it. This is like my bottom. And it wasn't. So just going back, you know, I spent all my college years really in bulimia, and it worked. It worked. I didn't really have any consequences. I was quite highly functioning in school, and I did well, and everything seemed to be going great. I finally got the boyfriend. I finally was okay in my own skin because I was controlling my body. And it really wasn't until I finished schooling where, like, I had the structure and I kind of knew what I wanted to do, that things started to become unmanageable. And I also think it's funny when I, you know, I picked a passion, I picked a, you know, a kind of what I wanted to go down career-wise was to be an actress, you know, where I could pretend to be someone else. It was a great distraction from me. And I loved getting on stage, putting on makeup and a different costume, and just not being Britney. Like, so you know, now it's just, I've always wanted to live in this imaginary world of not having to deal with reality. And so I pursued that. And so it came to the end of my college, and all of a sudden I had to go into the real world and get a job, and I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I remember I had like one thing to do, and it was take my resume to a bunch of different theaters, and I couldn't do it. I was freaking out. And so what do? I eat. And I went to the food, and it just started getting like out of control. Cause now I don't have school. My boyfriend left me this time. And I thought that was it. Like, this is my bottom. And I came out about my eating disorder, even though my parents already knew, my family already knew. I was discreet until I wasn't, I guess. And they had suspected that I had issues because I couldn't be present. I was obsessed with where we went to eat. It had to be where I wanted to go. And so my mom ended up putting me in a treatment center in 2014, and it happened to be in South Florida. And thank God it was a 12-step program. Or at least they introduced us to the 12 steps. They took us to meetings, and that was the best gift that they gave me because I got a lot of tools from it. I was there for a lot longer than I probably needed to be. But that's where I was exposed to meetings, including OA. I had never heard of a 12-step meeting before. And that is also during the time where I met an amazing woman on this meeting who is probably the reason I'm still breathing today and is still my sponsor and my best friend and all that good stuff. But I was so young, and I was about 18 years old, and I, you know, went to, you know, I was in this treatment facility, and we went to an OA meeting, and that's where I met her. And honestly, I always laugh because I'm like, well, she was skinny. I want her to be my sponsor. She's skinny and pretty. And that's where my head was at. You know, I had no clue. I had no clue about like this. Thank God I ended up picking someone that has a beautiful program and a relationship with God, and you know, insides match the outside, but that wasn't what I was attracted to. I was so consumed again with like, I just want to be able to like find a way to eat and like stay skinny. Like, cause that's the answer. That's the answer. And one of the first conversations I ever had, she said to me, so how are you doing? You're in treat, you know, how are you doing? And I'm shaking, and I'm like, I'm good. I'm great. I feel really good. I've got, you know, a couple of days of abstinence. And she said, you're good. I'm like, yeah. She goes, you're full of shit. I was like, what? I am good. I had no clue. I wasn't good. I was a mess, but I was so incapable again, because I had so many layers to get through, so many facades. My whole life has been about like, just trying to show you what I think you need to see. And it's honestly a miracle, because I ended up going back to Bermuda after that. And had I not stayed in contact with this woman every single day from that day to today, I'd be dead, because I went back to Bermuda and there are no meetings there. They had like one AA meeting, and she encouraged me to go there, and I was like, I want to go. And anyways, I did go. We spoke every day, and it was that connection, that one anorexic, one bulimic talking to another, that saved my life, honestly, because it was then from that period to a couple of years later that I just never left. I never left since that day. And I, again, thought, well, I'm going to go back to school and get my master's degree now. So it was always like, I just wasn't ready to grow up. I wasn't ready for the job yet. Still not really ready to grow up, but I thought, so I did another geographical cure, and I went to London and I tried to study something else. And the difference now is that I'm going to meetings every day, and I'm going to tons of meetings in the UK. I'm talking to my sponsor from across the world every single day. We didn't have Zoom at the time, but we did have a phone call, and I called her every single day. And I would go and I would binge and purge, and I would go to the meetings and I'd binge, and I couldn't get it. I'd get like maybe a couple of days, but I would struggle and struggle and struggle. And every holiday I had, instead of, you know, doing things with my friends, I would come and stay on her couch in Florida for different periods of length. And we'd work the steps and I'd get a little bit of time. And anyway, like I would always struggle. And eventually it got worse. It got worse after treatment. It got worse after being in these rooms, because that's what happens. It's a progressive disease. And, you know, I had like a lower physical weight, a bottom that was really scary at one point. And you would have thought that, I mean, my sick mind loved it, but I have had so many different bottoms at different points, and consequences.
5 minutes.
Oh, wow. Oh my God. Okay. And unmanageability. And I'm just going to quickly say a few, because people think, well, you know, I always relate to the big book with some of the consequences. I mean, the reality is I did binge and drive, you know, and I ended up hitting cars. I ended up one time being such a food fog that I forgot to put the parking brake up, and my car went in reverse, went into a ditch. My parents' car by itself went backwards, went to a ditch, and it was a total write-off. You know, I've swallowed a spoon and trying to make myself throw up at one point. I thought that was the end. I've almost been arrested and kicked out of places for using toilets and vomiting. And I've stolen food. I've gone to any lengths without necessarily like wanting to get to that place, whether to get the food or to get rid of the food. And I've had a lot of consequences from this disease. And yet it wasn't enough. It's taken what it's taken, and I can't tell my story in 20 minutes, but I know that something happened 3 years ago where I had been to treatment for the fourth or fifth time or more. I had already been on my sponsor's couch multiple times. You know, I've been going to meetings this whole time, and I was so sick. And so without, it was like for the first time, no human power. You know, I had come out of treatment again. It was the beginning of the pandemic. I had a broken ankle. I was living back with my parents. I had no job. I had no money. I could not walk, and I was back in it. And I did not understand how I was back here again. Like, how did I relapse again? Meetings had just started over Zoom, and it was this particular 4 p.m. Zoom meeting that had started. There were 5 or 6 people on here, not even 10 people were on this meeting. And it was the first meeting I'd gone to that was like an everyday meeting. And I couldn't believe it. It was like every single day. And I'd come on every day, and I'd be off camera, and I'd be binging and purging. And yet everyone was so welcome and loving. And that's the other thing that I've gotten in this program, the belonging. You know, the love and acceptance that I first got from my sponsor and then from other people in these rooms, where she was the first person that gave me permission to be where I was at. It's okay to binge and purge. You're bulimic. You're going to, you know? And so everyone just welcomed me, and I'd be off camera eating, and I couldn't stop. And I just keep sharing and talking, and something happened. And I always say, like, I don't know. I just know that I had some kind of spiritual bottom in my childhood bedroom where I'm holding my binge food, and it wasn't even that exciting, the food that I had in my hand. And my mom is like blocking the door because she had my car keys, because I wanted to drive off and get more binge food. And I'm screaming at her, and she's blocking the door. And I'm like a child. I mean, I'm almost 30 years old at this point. This was 3 years ago. And I just had this, it was like, oh my God, I am powerless. I am so powerless. But it was like a head to heart experience of accepting it, I think, in a way that I never accepted it before. And honestly, for a long time, I just didn't want to let go of the body control. And it's still been a process, you know? But that head to heart surrender took, 9 years? and I hope to God I don't have to go, you know, through that again, or ever have to go back to the food again. But I have to take that first step every day. And I do every day what I did the first day, which is I go to a meeting every single day. And I love this 4 p.m. I love it so much. I haven't even met most of you, but I feel like I know you. And I was one for like, no, I need an in-person meeting. And oh my God, I don't need, this is in person to me, you know? And I have a relationship with God today that I know isn't necessarily up in the sky, but also within, because I can get in contact with that still quiet voice that was so blocked because I work these steps. The steps unblock me. I work with others, and I love sponsoring. I do. I really do, because I get to see the light come back in someone's eyes the way the light came back in my eyes. I was dead physically, spiritually, emotionally. And I went to kill myself this last time, and I didn't go into the horrors of that because I feel like we've all been there in one way or another. But it is by the grace of God that not only am I abstinent today, that I'm alive. This is a deadly disease. This will kill me. That's where it takes me. I am a pretty low bottom bulimic, and
that is your time, Britt.
And that is my time. And I'm just so grateful to be able to hopefully carry this message to someone today. And if I can say, end with one thing, it's just that for whatever reason, step one is the hopelessness. I had to be so hopeless and broken down. And it's a good thing, because today I have hope. And I'm so grateful. So thank you so much